You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to episode 181 of Erk FM, coming down the pipes and into your ears from somewhere in central London. I'm not sure where exactly our guest has led me. Our guitarist extraordinaire, Matt Stevens. G'day, Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
And where have you led me?
This is the edge of Soho. So before you get to the... between the guitar shops... and the shops that sell pornographic material.
And what's the name of the pub?
Oh, I can't remember, to be honest. Pillars of Hercules.
We were actually in here the other day for Podcrawl. I don't know how that works.
It's one of those pubs. It's one of those places people do come. It's quite a nice pub, actually. It's all right. I've been here in a bit of a state occasionally. But, yes, it's a sort of place... I think they serve quite late as well, which is good.
Well, I was in quite a bit of a state the last time that I'm here, but we've been catching up about the trip and what's going on with you and everything like that. So for anyone out there who hasn't heard me play one of your songs or heard one of your promos, tell us, who is Matt Stevens?
I do stuff with a guitar and a sample pedal, and I make loops, and I build the layers up, and I play instrumental guitar stuff. That's kind of what I do, really. And I sort of spread it around the interweb, and I let people share it for no money at all, or I ask them to pay something if they can, and it means that I get to, people get to hear what I do, and I get to have a little audience, which is just brilliant. So, and Erk's been incredibly supportive of what I've done, so I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So tell us basically, what's the process involved? You're playing a guitar, and then what happens?
Play a little loop, so I put some chords down and I press a pedal and get that loop in, and then I press the pedal again and that loops the thing around, and then I can add layers to it. You know, like someone's making a multi-track album.
Yep.
Well, with this process I can make that multi-track track, that can't speak today, the multi-track album in front of the audience, so they can see all the little parts. So I'm really into sort of Radiohead and the Smiths and bands like that. I had loads of guitar layers, so you can actually see it in front of you when you do it. That's kind of the gist of it.
And what sort of guitar are you using?
It's an Ibanez one. It's not very good, to be honest. I got it in a shop in Brighton, and it had a hole in it, and it was really knackered. It was £100, and I fell in love with this guitar, and no one else wanted it. So I took it out and fixed it all up, put a new pickup in it, and it sounds really cool now. But so it's this guitar with loads of characters. It's a really crappy old Ibanez, but I love it, and it's my guitar.
So how did you get into music in the first place?
Well, when I was a kid, I wanted to be in Guns N' Roses like everyone else did. Yeah. In 1989. Well, we all wanted to be in Guns N' Roses or Iron Maiden or those heavy metal bands when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, never, that I sort of played in metal bands and that sort of thing. I played sort of indie rock bands and punky sort of bands, and then in the end, the last band split up, and I had this pedals, and off I went and did this acoustic stuff. And weirdly, I put it on Tinterweb, and people started to like it. And it was, it wasn't like there was any plan to do that. I was just really lucky that people actually liked it. And I play again in a band with some mates called The Fierce and the Dead as well, so we got that as well. And just through sheer luck, really, I managed to build a little following online, and the following grew and grew and grew until the point where there's a sort of few thousand people listening to it, and it's just like, oh, this is a bit weird. But very lucky, you know what I mean? Very lucky.
Now, the last time that we spoke, we were at, my mum, Judy, and I, we were in the Channel X studio back home in Australia, and you were at home. And you were having some major health issues, how's that going?
Well, it's funny enough, it's what resulted in me being a professional musician. Basically, I used to work a job I really, really liked. I've never really, I always loved music. That's kind of what I wanted to do. But I never sort of managed to commit myself to it until I did my backing. So it's like, basically, I was lifting a box up at work one day, and I had a spasm in my back and I got stuck, and I went to the doctors and they said, yeah, you've pulled the slip disc in your spine. So I thought, basically they said to me, this could be like this forever, you'll probably never be able to. And luckily, through osteopathy and through exercise, gradually got better to the point where I'm kind of okay now. I still have problems now and again, but very rarely. But I've just been so lucky. I can't tell you how. I mean, I still have to go to the osteopath every 6 weeks or so, just to get it checked on and make sure it's all right. But luckily, I recovered from it. But to be honest, I thought I was knackered there. I thought I'd never be able to do anything again because, I was just stuck. I was stuck on the floor for weeks. It wasn't our fault, to be honest.
Weren't you on the floor during that interview?
Yeah, I was talking to you and Judy, and I was lying on my back with the laptop on my chest, talking to you.
Yeah.
How ridiculous.
I know.
And I honestly thought at that point, I thought there's no way I'm ever going to get over this. And I had all these sort of surgical procedures and all this sort of thing. And I thought, this is just going to carry on forever. But luckily, this osteopath came along, got me moving, and I started doing exercise, and then he got me moving more. And eventually, I got over it. But I just thought, yeah, I'm knackered here. But yeah, I'm very, very lucky. Touch wood, hopefully, it's going to stay that way for a while. I'm very careful about things I lift now.
Yeah.
I've learned my lesson.
So back at those times when it was looking really dark, you had your guitar and you were still doing online gigs because life was basically an impossibility.
Yeah, I couldn't do gigs. I was stuck at home. I was doing online gigs, but I could only sort of sit in that position for half an hour or so. And it was such a gift to me to be able to play again. So I sort of lie on my back and play for a bit, or sit up and play for a bit. And I had periods during my life where it was only at that point I kind of realised how special the guitar was to me, how into it I was. Because when someone takes it away, it's just like, no, this is what I really want. And it was just got a realisation that I really wanted to do that, kind of pushed me to do more music stuff. So the fact that my back was limiting my playing, you really appreciate the time you get on the instrument.
Yeah.
You just think, oh, this is hate, you know what I mean? And it's made it kind of re-inspired me and made me really want to do it as well. So, you appreciate things when things go wrong a bit.
There's a big difference between playing a guitar standing up or sitting down or lying on your back, I presume.
Oh, yeah, and you've got no control. It's just like, I was, you'd sort of sit in one position and you'd have to move again. And if then he sort of locked. It's really embarrassing because my wife would come home and I'd be sort of locked in the same position. It's ridiculous, you know what I mean? And it's really embarrassing as well because for a long time I tried to keep on working because I was one of these people who was like, oh, I don't want to be off sick, can't do that. And I kept going to my day job and just kept either getting sent home. And one time I was coming out of work and my back went so badly. People thought I was drunk, so I was crawling along the side of this shopping centre. And they'd be like, you're all right, mate. Yeah, now my back's gone, I've not been drinking. And, it was kind of them things where it was almost like the hand of fate forced me to move on and do something else. So, funny, these sort of things work out that, in a funny sort of way, it kind of worked out for the best. And, through that time as well, I was on my computer.
Yeah.
I was talking to like people at IRC and making friends with bloggers and podcasters and people who go on forums and all this stuff. And I made so many really, really good friends. You know, aside from the fact that people listen to the music, but these friendships that I developed became incredibly valuable to me because I was stuck inside all the
yeah.
time. You know, these, you know, I made so many friends. I really, and I say, meeting up in a pub in, like, yeah, well, 18 months later.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Just to, like, these friendships just become incredibly valuable to you. So, yeah, no, it's been a funny old time.
And so, back then, when we last spoke to you on the show, you were... Were you launching Ghost?
Yeah, I think it was just before it came out, wasn't
yeah.
it? We were just finishing it off. And then that came out and it sort of sold more than I ever imagined. It was just this kind of... gradually this sort of magazines wrote about it and so we got quite a bit of press for it and then I got gigs. I was opening for Barker James Harvey, so I went for Fish and doing these sort of big gigs. And eventually it sort of got this sort of culty sort of audience for it. And I think it was a lot of it's through people telling their friends about it, sort of word of mouth. But yeah, I've just been incredibly lucky. But yeah, like when we last spoke, I never predicted that.
Yeah, yeah.
If I've got 20 people to listen to, I'll blow the moon. You know what I mean? So I'm not somebody with vast expectations, and if I can get a few people listening to it, that's great. So you know, already the audience for it is far more than I could ever imagine. So yeah, just been really, really lucky, really.
So what have you been up to since Ghost?
Yeah, we just did a load of gigs. It was about September of last year I was finally able to start gigging again. Slightly later than that, but I did a load of online gigs. And then I started about November gigging again. Then I got a gig opening for Barker James Harvest, which is like 800 people in a massive hall, which is just ridiculous. Just like, well, it's people. This bloke walks out with an acoustic guitar. What about I've got loads of playing these festivals. I'm off to Liverpool and playing in Wales, Blackpool, all over the UK. And I've had offers from all over the world to go and play. So yeah, it's been so lucky. And it's just one of them things where if you tried to make it happen, it wouldn't have worked. And even sort of telling you now. Thinking about it, it just doesn't seem real.
Yeah.
It just seems like, you know, I met a bloke I used to work with, and he said to me, "What do you do now?" I said to him, "What I do." And he was like, "You know, what's been happening with that?" And I sort of told him, and he was like, "And it was after I was telling him, I was like, this doesn't sound right."
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all, you know, that's what happens. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, I've got I do a bit of writing as well. And at the moment, I'm sort of ticking over, but obviously, we'll see what happens. You know, I've got things happening, so
yeah.
we'll see. But for the moment, yeah, I've ended up doing music for a living, which is great.
So when you are at a gig, a live gig, do you sort of try and promote the guitar angle beforehand, or is it just like, I'm Matt Stevens, come and watch me, to those who have got absolutely no idea who you are?
I try and explain it. I mean, a lot of the time I'm doing support slots. I mean, I'm very lucky that most of the gigs I do, if people come, they kind of know what to expect. Just be some bloke with a guitar, you know. But it's almost as I'm doing the show, I try and explain it to people. So I try and say, I'm doing this with the pedals. And I put out a live album last year, and you can hear me going, yeah, I'm putting a loop together now. Just to try and, you know, to keep it interesting for people, really. But, you know, yeah, it's... You kind of have to explain it. I did this, some of the support slots I did. I did this one opening for Fish. He was a lovely bloke, he was so nice and that. His audience were just like, he took his hand off the guitar and the sound's still coming out. Burn him! Burn him! So it's like, I think some people don't get what I do really, and I sort of try and explain it. But they're like, yet to the third song, he's still not singing. What's going on? It's rubbish. And so, and I think when I play live, some people really love it, and some people just go, "What's this? Is just there's no singing on this. This isn't proper music." So I've been very, very lucky. But people like it's Marmite music or Vegemite. Whereas people love it or they hate it. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's but great that some people love it. Eh? You know what I mean?
Do you notice the change of some people, like, in the middle of the gig, they sort of get into it the more you play?
Yes, I mean, so, some gigs I do, like I say, you get two responses. You get people who go, oh, this is fantastic, and people who go, this is just instrumental, this isn't even proper music. And you certainly spit to the audience, but I think sometimes it's better to spit the audience than people to go, you know, this is all right. I think I'd rather have the reaction that people either love it or hate it. And some people do hate what I do, and some people love it as well. So kind of think you're lucky to have either of those reactions.
What's the worst reaction have you had? Have you had, like, someone throw stuff at you? Or
the worst thing is, if I... I've got some Google Alerts set up for my name. Yes. And so some of the times you're doing these sort of sports stuff, these sort of well-known bands, they have a forum. So you look on the forum, and, like, after the gig, you sort of come on. Like, yeah. Most of the time, what you're trying to get is either people going wildly enthusiastic or being very indifferent. So they'll just kind of ignore you. But when they come off stage, and if you do look, happen to look at one of these forums, you might find somebody telling them what they really think.
Yeah.
Which is, this is, well, you get two reactions. Like I say, it's always the two reactions. It's either, there's never a sort of, it's all right, you know. There's always this reaction of, this is fantastic, or this is rubbish.
Yeah.
And it's, in many ways, it's sort of, you learn more from the people going, it's rubbish. You sort of think, well, perhaps I've got something I can learn from this, perhaps it's something I'm not doing right. So you sort of try and, the act, when I'm doing the act, it's very, I've got more and more sort of aggressive and energetic, so I really put a lot into it on stage.
Yeah.
I don't like bands when you see them and they're just boring and just stood there. Yes.
Yeah, just strum.
Yeah, you've got to put something into it, so I'm trying to put, you know, as much as I can with the pedals, I'm trying to put a lot of effort into the stage show as well. And it's kind of difficult, really, to... People are either going to like it or they're not. That's all you can do in it.
Because you're not, quote-unquote, mainstream, have you had any problems booking gigs?
I did at the start. But once I started getting the press on side, and people... To be honest, all the gigs I'm doing at the moment, people have phoned me up and offered me them.
Yeah.
So... that's the kind of weird thing. It's like, before I was trying to get gigs, it was hard. But now I'm not really... booking a lot, because I've got other things going on as well, and bits happening. I get offered quite a few, so that's a bit weird. I'm not complaining.
Yeah,
it's great to be in a position to get offered gigs.
Yeah,
but I don't think, you know, I can only gig in a certain. I mean, you know, supporting rock bands is great, or doing, I do like acoustic nights and stuff. But I don't think I could just sort of play anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, in a really mainstream setting, like in a, say you're in a bar, there's a covers band, yeah. I open for them, I'd die.
Yeah.
Because people want to hear, you know, AC/DC, Beatles, yeah. Whatever, you know what I mean? And I don't do that. So, yeah, you know, it's just the...
Do you actually sing?
No.
You have singing ability?
Never. Oh, well, I can sing. My wife, well, I can't. Yeah, I do sing, but I can't sing.
Yeah.
My singing is horrendous. I sing in the shower, and my wife catches me humming on the sofa sometimes, and I even hum out of tune. Can't even do that. So she says, I would never to ever sing. Now, I do have slight aspirations to sing, but some people can't do something. You know what I mean? It's like, you've got to play to your strengths.
We're here in London, we're here in one of many pubs.
Yeah.
What's your impression of the live music scene in general from your experience?
It's very sort of marginalised. So you'll have punk nights, metal nights, prog nights, and it's every, you know, it's very sort of, because it's such a big scene, it's very niche, it's very specific sort of scenes. So it's like an acoustic night. And I mean, I do a lot of proggy sort of gigs, and then I'll support, you know, I do post-rocky type gigs, and then I do acoustic gigs. So I'm very lucky, you know, I cross over. But some bands, they can only play very limited places, because there's only so many gigs you can do a year. And it's pretty much the same as that across the UK, really. You know, it's very much, there's a metal night or a punk night, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them aren't great gigs. A lot of the time it's sort of pay to play, or which is terrible. I really hate all that stuff. Or it's you have to bring people. I'm very lucky that I've just sort of got slightly past that circuit now, where I'm just sort of doing gigs where people sort of come in and sort of thing. So that took me a long, took 3 or 4 years to get out of that.
For those people who quite aren't aware, explain the premise of play to pay and also bringing people.
Well, pay to play is basically the band has to buy a certain amount of tickets from the promoter. So they have to buy, say, £300 worth of tickets. And if they don't sell those tickets, they have to they lose that money, which is just so the entire risk for the gig isn't with the band, it's with with the promoter, it's with the band, which is completely unfair. So you know the promoter's not doing any work and they're just pocketing that 300 quid. Some places bring a thing where unless you bring 30 people you don't get paid, which is slightly fairer than the pay to play principle. But that's kind of fairly standard that you have to, they want you to bring people. And I can see the logic of that. I can see why people do that. But the pay to play thing just completely massively wrong. And really really, you know, if you're going to pay 300 quid or 200 quid in tickets, buy your own venue, put your own night on, do something exciting. Don't give the money to these idiot promoters, you know what I mean? There are some fantastic promoters out there. I've worked with some, you know, the people I work now are pretty much all good. But you have to sort of get past the pay to play, bring people circuit to get to that level. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
Really hard to get past.
So what are you doing to promote gigs? How do you do it?
A lot of Facebook, a lot of Twitter. The best thing I've got to promote gigs is my email list, which has got like 2,500 people on it. And that makes such a difference. And then I do sometimes advertising to the real niche magazines. Talk to people on podcasts and that, and just it's just all about having a conversation with the audience and just talking to them. So I was saying to her earlier, like it's not like a lot of time I'm not thinking about promoting stuff, I'm just talking to people, and just along that time to that conversation there'll be something that promotes my music. But it's not like I go on Twitter and think, you know what, I want to sell loads of CDs, I really want to sell loads of things. I'm just talking nonsense about Doctor Who all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a load of old...
The amount of effort that I had to go to stop Matt from going into a Doctor Who ride and stuff earlier.
As I was saying to her, it's probably best I don't go in there because, you know, I'm terrible at things like that. I'm a right nerd.
And then, of course, there was all the guitar shops that we walked past as well. Because we're in a pretty musical-rich sort of history area.
Yeah, see, I was saying to her, there's The Who recorded loads of stuff in that street, and the Sex Pistols formed in that street, and it's very rich in that sort of Pistols scene. And then he had, you know, the same with London. It seems like it's a big city, but for music, really, it's a small city because there's only so many venues where things are happening. Like that Denmark Street, every musician who's ever lived in London would have gone there because that's where all the guitar shops are. That's where, and you know, if you want to see famous people, you hang around Denmark Street long enough, you'll see famous people. You know?
Yeah,
that's the way it is.
Are there some venues that you just won't touch? You just think, no, I'm not going in there.
Yeah, there's one called the Water Rats, which I'd like to publicly say is a pay-to-play venue. Which is so I wouldn't touch it. Different promoters do use it, though, and some of the promoters are fine. But one of the main promoters is famously pay to play. There are some fantastic venues. The Peel is fantastic in Kingston. It's funny enough, the venues, the better support slots and stuff, you do get treated better. People say the music industry is really horrible, and some of it is, but not all of it is. Some of the people are lovely, some of them are so nice. They feed you and they, you know, they really look after you, it's fantastic. But unfortunately, there's a lot of arseholes in there as well.
Yeah.
So that kind of colours it, I'm afraid.
If current day you could go back and give some advice to you when you first started, is there any one thing that you've learnt that would be really awesome that you wish you had known back then?
Yeah, don't worry about it, because eventually, whatever you do, however hard you try to do stuff, eventually your music will find an audience. And it might take 20 years, but eventually it'll happen. And, you know, I think a lot of the time you worry that, you know, you need to be in a band by the time you're 25, you need to be a rock star, you need to do all this stuff. It's all nonsense. You just have to do things your way and see what happens, and eventually something will work if you keep going. It's not just about being in the right place the right time and all that. You're just turning up and keeping going and keeping going and keeping going, and eventually something will happen if you hang around the music scene for 20 odd years.
And of course it happened for you mainly because of something that you know, a lot of people would have thought, oh, well, I'm screwed. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to put myself through that situation of, like, playing a guitar while lying flat on my back. And you've run and you've carried on with it and you've come out a better person.
I was lucky, to be honest. I mean, I could see it again. Oh, yeah. It was, well, I was very lucky in that my back went and I was just, you know... I used to work in a job that... I mean, like I said, I quite liked it. It was... I used to work in the music retail, and obviously music retail is on the way out now as well, so, you know, I was glad to be out of that. But, yeah, you know, I was very lucky. And when I was... One of the good things about being lying on the floor and not being able to do a lot, if you've got an internet connection, a laptop... You just sort of keep going, you keep doing it, and no distractions. Because you're just like, I can't pop up the shop, because I'm stuck here, you know what I mean? I've got to wait till my wife comes in so she can make sure I can get up all right, you know.
Have you ever been tempted, like in that situation, to send a message to a fan or to your wife or say, I need this, send help, or I need, you know, need something down the shop?
Yes. No, I mean, to be honest, I mean... most of what kept me going was talking to everybody, like I said, just those conversations like yourself and like Nick and all the podcaster guys and all the blogger guys and all that, just talking to people. And a lot of time people send me interviews to me, it's like, oh brilliant, it's like, oh, you're doing an interview, brilliant, I'll type all this interview up, and that sort of kept me sane. And then writing my blog, and then a company called Live and Signed, I wrote a load of stuff for them, and that sort of developed into something that sort of paid some bills and stuff. So I developed, you know, I was very lucky to sort of do things I was interested in. So it was almost like, I don't know if I could have, I think if I tried to do it, it wouldn't have worked. It was just complete, like I was saying to you earlier, it's like, you know, telling you, talking about it here, to me it just seems like it couldn't possibly happen.
Yeah.
But it did.
It did. And you've come out the other side.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I wish I knew... I suppose something had to force my hand to do what I really wanted to do, and luckily this forced it. But who knows what'll happen? You know, You can't. One of the things I've learned from it all is you never know where you're going to be in 6 months' time.
Yeah.
You never know where you're going to be in a year's time, and you have to appreciate every day. You know that you're lucky to be able to do anything you want to do.
Yeah. Really.
You don't take your health for granted after you have something like that.
Yeah. How have you found the local podcasting community? Do you remember how you found people such as Nick Tand in the first place?
Nick contacted me, I think, when I was just starting to do stuff. And Nick contacted me and we became quite matey. And I'd found the AMP through... I can't remember where I found them. It must have been through like Podcast Alley or something.
Yeah,
might have been Pete's podcast, possibly. I'm not sure. Or Pete or Rowley or something like that. Anyway, I found the AMP through that. I gradually got to know the people through that. And I told Nick about the AMP.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know about it before. And I said, as we were talking about it, he said... we're having a chat on Skype, I think. And he said about his podcast, he started to get some decent figures for it. You know, people starting to listen. So I said, well, you want to push that a bit more? Make that, you know, give that a bit of a push, because that seems to be going well for you.
Yeah.
So he started doing it, and then he came across the AMP guys, and then they got... I think it was just a fluke, really.
Yeah.
I think Podcast Alley, as it was in about 2008, I mean, I started doing all the promotional stuff before my back went. So I just started to get to know, and I really did a lot of it last year. But when it happened initially, that's been through that, just luck, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, for all I know, there might be loads of other podcasting communities I don't know about.
Yeah.
But I think for music, I think this is the main sort of thing, isn't it?
And having so many people that you could ask questions of, if you've got a new track, we'll play it.
Exactly, that sort of thing. What a community, you know what I mean? So, I tell you, I've been so lucky to find those people, and everybody's been so nice to me as well. So it's just like, you know, you couldn't wish to be more supportive. And the other cool thing about it is, no one does it for the money.
Yeah.
No one's going, I'm doing it, you know. Everyone does it because they love music and because they love podcasting. So, you know, it's only done people. I've never met a podcaster who's been anything other than really nice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like they're trying to build a career. I'm trying to build a multimedia empire, thank you much.
Yeah.
They're just nice people who just yeah. love music. Everyone I've come across has been really, really cool. So I'd say I was very lucky to find that community, really.
Yeah.
But everybody was nice. How weird's that?
Yeah.
It's like you normally come across somebody and think, it's going to be a... Everybody's been really cool. It's really... I think musicians need to appreciate what they get with podcasters a lot more.
Yeah.
Because those podcasters, you know, if you were to try and reach 5,000 people out, like in the audience a lot of these podcasts have, if you were trying to reach that, it'd cost you thousands of pounds to reach that audience. So to get to reach that audience just through the pure goodwill of someone doing it, that's such a privilege. And I think bands need to realise how cool that is. And to make sure they, you know, submit tracks and give early tracks and give, you know, any early copies of things to podcasters and just do everything they can to support them, help them grow their audience, because we're all one big community, we're all working together on this. So,
have you found musicians in your experience, there's still some out there who have got absolutely no idea what a podcast or who a podcaster is?
Yeah, half of them. Musicians are funny because some of them don't want anything to do with the internet, or if they do have anything to do with the internet, they're absolutely obsessed with copyright. They're obsessed with not giving anything away. I don't want to give anything away. It's like, well, you know, if you don't do anything, I can tell you what will happen if you don't play your music to anybody and your music, you don't share your music on podcasts, nothing will happen. No one will ever hear it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not going to be any, no one's going to copy it because no one will know about it.
Yeah.
So if people are copying your music, you're doing well because they care about it. No one torrents music they don't care about.
Yeah.
I think a lot of musicians are very much of the opinion that, you know, the internet's ruining their careers and all this stuff. And it's like, well, no one was buying your records anyway. So it's like, you know, if people are sharing it, at least, you know, if you, someone said to me the other day, oh, my album's been torrented 20,000 times and all this stuff, well, yet no one's going to your gig. And I'm like, well, that's probably because I don't really believe it's been, if it's been torrented that amount of times, more people would be going to gigs. So with podcasting, people don't really get it a lot of the time. I don't think they realise how big your audiences are.
Yeah.
I think if they realise that, you know, they'd be a lot keener to be involved.
Although then again, you know, it is an education process, and I know I go through the same thing with bands that I meet up. You know, and it's always good to find a musician such as yourself who will look after us.
Oh, too right. I mean, the amount you guys have done for me, I'm just better be grateful, to be honest. You know what I mean? I've got a massive debt of gratitude, and I say that goodwill that's come from the podcast. And like I say, it's sort of kept me going for a while, really. You know what I mean?
And if it wasn't for the internet, where would you be?
Well, exactly. No one would have heard me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a complete fluke that any of it happened, that the technology had lined up with me having an injury, having loads of time to do it. I mean, I would say with the internet, it's very much how much you put into it and how much, you know, with a musician now you need to have people skills and be able to say, some musicians just don't have people skills. You can't see, you know, like some of the musicians just haven't got those skills. They still need labels, they still need all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. I'm not saying one business model would work well for everybody. You know, some bands need a record label because they're just not motivated to do it. They're not entrepreneurial. They're not. They're just very shy. You know.
Is there a downside of the internet for you?
Well, it's just that thing of people access to payment. Really. I just think it's better if people hear it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Surely you've got more chance of being paid if people hear it than if they haven't. So, I think, what's the downside of it? Sometimes people have a sense of entitlement to free music. So a lot of the time I'm happy to give away free downloads in exchange for people listening to it. But some people have this thing where musicians shouldn't charge anything for music.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's down, I think it's down to musicians to charge themselves. So I don't think there should be a sense of entitlement to people's music for free. So if people want to choose to sell for it, they should. But fundamentally, for people doing obscure music, the internet's been a positive thing. It's not been a positive thing for many mainstream artists.
Yeah.
Because it means that the basically advertising spend to get somebody big, you know, like a stadium-filling type band, is so expensive. You need to sell records to recoup that. And because you can't sell the records to recoup anymore, you can't get the bands getting too big. So what you've probably noticed over the last 10 years, there's been less big bands coming through.
Yeah.
So if, you know, you had the early 2000s, you had Coldplay, Muse, and bands like that. There's less of that now.
Yeah.
There's less big bands. But for obscure, weird, esoteric, non-mainstream artists, it's been largely positive, to be honest. Because, I mean, at least, weirdly, now I get offered record deals that I can go now to want, which is just weird. You know what I mean? You know, we sat down with that Fierce of the Dead album last year, and we had two different labels, two decent indie labels offering this deal. So I'm just like, well, we're only going to sell a few thousand copies. If we do it via a label, we won't make enough money from it.
Yeah.
So we might as well just do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can't see it becoming a big thing. So, you know, at least we're in the place to be able to, you know, decide if you're going to have it or not.
Do some punters have that sense of entitlement as well when it comes to a gig?
Well, they should get in free.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I mean, as a musician, you just want to be heard, really. You're not really bothered. It's nice to get paid, but the most important thing is people to listen to you.
Yeah.
I don't know, really. I mean, I don't think people do want to pay. One of the things I have learned is people want to pay for the music they love, so they will choose to pay. And that happens a lot. That's happened far more than I could ever imagine it happening. So I think the argument that people don't want to pay for music, there's some people that feel like, oh yeah, we should be entitled to this free music. I think there's also a very strong argument to be said that people want to pay for music. They don't necessarily want to give money to retailers and rail companies, but they certainly want to pay musicians.
Yeah.
And I've found people to be very generous and supportive. So It's a funny time.
So, speaking of musicians, are there any musicians at the moment that you're listening to that you're enjoying?
There's a band called Knife World. I was saying to you earlier. They're brilliant. I'll send you that.
Yeah.
I've got it. He used to be, this fellow called Carvis used to be a band called Cardiacs. Cardiacs were amazing as well, but they're really, really just bonkers band. They're brilliant. Now is a really exciting time for music, and I say that's what I'm currently listening to. I've just found so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, and it's almost like there's just a deluge of great music. There's also a deluge of rubbish music as well.
Yeah.
Oh God. I mean, one of the problems you've got at the moment is so a lot of things I've sort of written about and stuff. It's like it has opened a lot of doors.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and there's a sluice gate of crap as well. So you've got this lots of great stuff. And lots of rubbish.
Yeah.
It's all sort of deluge at you all the time. And it's very hard to filter it. And that's why people like Urk are so important. Because what they do is they filter the stuff. So you get to hear the good stuff. And you avoid all the, you know, the less great stuff. You know?
But then again, it's all subjective. What might be rubbish for me might not be rubbish for you.
Totally agree, man. And it's just very, very true. It's almost like you have to sort of go to your people you trust, like your mates or a podcast or a blog. And it's almost a problem now is filtering through the music that you like. And like I say, my definition of what's crap might be someone else's definition of what's brilliant.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying for a moment I've got any answers to this. What do I know? You know what I mean? some bloke with a dodgy back from North London. But, you know, it's completely subjective. It's completely down to what you think.
Do you find trouble keeping motivated in terms of coming up with new material? Is that difficult?
Not really. because I love playing the guitar, I find it harder to practice old material. I really love coming up with new stuff. So I'm quite happy. One of the terrible things I do is I'll listen to podcasts all day, playing acoustic guitar, or watching the telly, or watching films. And I play the guitar all the time along with it. So I gradually get a lot of ideas for stuff. You know, I'm good at coming up with stuff. I'm really slack on practicing the old stuff, though. I'm a bit rubbish at that. So I need to practice the old stuff more. I just love coming up with new ideas. Sometimes I get to the point where things don't come. I'm in a reasonably good phase at the moment, but I'm sure I'll hit a wall again soon where I don't write anything for a year or something. It's just lucky, maybe. I don't really know.
Do you sometimes combine like two old songs to?
Oh yeah, loads of that. I've had ideas that I've had for like 15 years, and then the ideas I've had for a week, and I'll combine them and stuff. Like some of the stuff on Ghost goes back years and years, you know, 15, 20 years, right from when I was a kid. And then some of it's like stuff I read at the time. So really, it's, you know, I wish I had a better answer.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's just bits and bobs of everything, really.
Do people have a favourite that they come up to you and, or they talk to you and they say, you know, this is the best track?
There's one called Big Sky on Ghost that people say to me a lot of their lives. So, I mean, it's a blessing anyone likes anything you do, really.
Yeah.
I never expected anyone to like any of it. So if anybody likes it, it's pretty great. I was just really lucky to have people like it. But yeah, that one, people like that one.
Now, I'm pretty sure I asked you this question the last time we interviewed you, but I'll ask it anyway for people who might not have heard it, and I will put a link in the show notes for the previous interview. It'll be interesting to notice the difference between Matt sitting up and Matt lying down.
Yeah, well, I'm probably a bit slightly cheerier now, I suppose. Quite cheery then.
So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're asleep and you have a really good idea. What does Matt Stevens do?
What musical idea? I have been known to wake in the middle of the night and go down to the sofa without trying to wake the wife up, and go down and wake up the cat and do a bit of recording. I have been known to do that. I'm quite a heavy sleeper though, so
yeah.
Most of the time I'm completely out all night. But yeah, I'll spend, you know, I'll wake up and write stuff. The ideas, I've been very lucky to get the ideas. Don't know what happens if the ideas run out. That's the trouble with any creative job, isn't it?
Yeah.
What happens when they go? I don't know, really.
Or you could just be walking down the street and that happen
all the time. Yeah. It's I wish you could control it, I suppose, really. I mean, you get ideas all the time, but it's not me. It's not like I'm probably most of the crap.
Yeah.
if you spend it, yeah, talking to my wife any time, she'll know ridiculous, stupid ideas I completely come up with. But you get the odd good one. So I'm trying to think of a name of a song. I'm writing a song for a compilation album my friend's putting out on his record label, and I can't think of a name of a song. I've been walking around for 3 days trying to think of a name for a song. So what I'm hoping is, when me and her are walking around today, I'll see a name somewhere and it will attach itself to that song. But I don't know, to be honest.
Just as long as it's not Abbey Road or something, exactly. That'll get your ass sued.
That's where the problem for you is, walking around London, it's all been done, hasn't it?
So, yeah. That's all a bit of a cliche at the end.
Yes, exactly, yeah, so you've got to be a bit careful. So I'm hoping something will inspire me, but not yet.
So what's happening? What's the plan for Matt Stevens? I know you've got some other stuff in the background.
I've got I've got a new album out next month now. Then a load of gigs, and then from there on in, I don't know really whether I'll carry on doing music or do some sort of job, or I don't really know, to be honest. Like I was saying to work earlier, I didn't know I was going to get here, so I don't know where I'm going to be in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wish I knew. But yeah, I've been very lucky to get where I am, so let's see what happens, you know, in the next 6 months. I mean, I really hope people listen to Relic. I hope people, that's the new one, I hope people like it, but we'll see, who knows.
Awesome. So what we should probably do, we should probably play a track so people have been listening to us for however long it's been.
Blimey.
And so we should give some people some idea.
Okay, yeah, cool. So, I'll send you a new one that no one's ever played before.
Okay.
I'll send you the MP3 tonight. It's called Rushton Fair. And no one's ever heard it apart from me, my wife, and my friend who recorded it. And it'll be the first time it's been played on this show. So I'll send you that.
Awesome. What's the story? Any story, backstory?
It's a song about when I was a kid. Come from a place called Rushton, actually, Northamptonshire in the UK. And this really weird fair comes to town every year. And it's quite melancholic. It's not the only, the cheeriest one on the album, but it's just an acoustic guitar, and I'll listen to that.
Awesome. So what's the best place for people to find you on the interweb?
On Tinterweb, it's www.mattstevensguitar.com. That's my website. But if you just Google Matt Stevens, bizarrely I'll come up.
Do any other Matt Stevens come up.
There's a rugby player called Matt Stevens. There's a snooker player called Matt Stevens. There's a bloke who designs trainers called Matt Stevens. And there's me.
And there's you as well.
Not many. Bizarrely, I'm the number one hit at the moment.
Actually, I thought there might have been a bit more.
There's probably a few more.
But then again, with the amount of content that you're putting out, well, of course, exactly, you're up there.
Because the amount of nonsense I talk, it does tend to take it up a bit higher, yeah. But yeah, it's, for some, I think it's different in different places, because obviously Google's become a bit weird now with that. But yeah, that's where it is.
Awesome. Matt Stevens, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Thanks loads, much appreciated, man.
And when the new album comes out, get on it.
Yeah, I'll get you.
Awesome. So, on behalf of Matt and I, here is an exclusive for IRC FM, and we're going to hear the new song, which is called
Rushed and Fair.
On behalf of Matt and myself, good night, it's where.
Ta-da!